Well, hello. Welcome to True Crime Broads. We appreciate you tuning in. This is Crystal.
And Renee.
And we are here to discuss again the Missy Beavers case.
So how has the your last few days been going?
You know, pretty good. The quarantine, you know, is pretty crazy. I know that none of our times have ever experienced anything like this. It's just really crazy, but I think we're all getting by and kind of realizing the things that we were taking for granted prior to this period of time. How about you guys?
Absolutely the same. It's been very challenging trying to stay busy. I mean, I think trying to stay busy, there's plenty of things to do, but it's like when you're used to working every day and being super busy, and then you go to just sitting at home, and you know, and of course we don't have kids at home, so it's, you know, different. It's not like they keep us busy because they're grown and they're gone. So it's just a matter of going, okay, so what can I do that I haven't had time to do in the past?
Yeah, I hear you. Totally. And, you know, I was lucky that I had some business stuff cooking before this happened. And so those deals are closing this week. So I feel lucky in that regard. But honestly, the pipeline is drying up because no one's really, it seems like not that many people are doing any new business. You know, at least not as much. So we'll see how it goes. But I feel blessed that things are going as well as they are. And I'm just going to hope things continue to get better. I just really hope that all of our listeners, that there's no one out there affected by the actual virus itself, and none of your loved ones are. We'll keep everybody in our thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm glad that you have something working right now, and hopefully this month just flies by and we will just learn from it, and things will just be better from here on out.
And I really wouldn't mind if my kids and everyone else sort of kept their vigilant, you know, the new hygiene. Everyone's on a heightened level of hygiene. I would love it if we all stayed that way. That would be ideal.
I know. It's been crazy. I haven't had any issues with anything that I've needed that I haven't been able to get, with the exception of hand sanitizer. And so I was able to finally get a couple of bottles of that. Felt like I kind of won the lottery there for a minute.
Yeah, no doubt. I know. I can't find Clorox wipes. And honestly, I never even used Clorox brand wipes, hardly ever. It's, you know, Lysol, store brand, anything I haven't been able to find. So that's been my thing that I miss the most. Although I do have a couple that are still have a few left in them, but I'm nearing the end and I'm starting to worry that I won't be able to find more. But you know what? That's third world problems. I'm certainly getting by with antibacterial cleaners and, you know, towels, so we'll make it.
It seems like the stores are starting to finally kind of have things that they haven't had in a while, with the exception of the hand sanitizer, like toilet paper and stuff. You're actually going to the stores and seeing a little bit, not, it's not just completely worked out. So that's a good thing. So maybe it's starting to at least calm down on the hoarding end.
Right. I hope so. We're still having trouble with toilet paper in our area, but the bottled water is back. There was a time where about a week or two ago, you couldn't find bottled water anywhere. Now, my local store has piles of it, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I know. I think they finally got a lot of it in, and now everybody don't need it.
Yeah. I'm hoping, like you were saying before, I hope people run out of storage space for all their hoarding.
I know.
So the rest of us can have a chance, you know?
Right, because I haven't hoarded anything, so I'm going to be having to find who those people are.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hopefully they're not selling it at a, you know, triple the rate or something. But anyway.
Exactly.
All right. So what are we covering today?
You know, we had discussed, I think, that we might go over, you know, Tim had made a suggestion that we discuss the gender biases in the media and regarding this case. And, you know, you and I have experienced that. And I'm normally not the first person to say I'm being discriminated against because I'm a woman. I've just, that's never really been a big part of my makeup. But, you know, Tim did point out that, and he's right, that when this case comes up, a lot of times people focus on she was having affairs and that somehow might have led to her demise, which I actually after all this time. And that's a different topic, but I really don't believe that it is going to end up having anything to do with it at all. However, the fact that it comes up so much, you would think, I mean, I think that if when men have affairs or an affair, we don't even know for sure if Missy had affairs. We've heard things, but you know, I hesitate to, even though one or two was hinted about in a search warrant, I still hesitate to say that we know, because we don't know. Only Missy knows. But anyway, I just find it interesting that if when a man has an affair, it's just sort of mentioned sort of almost in passing. But I feel like with Missy, everyone, especially on social media, which I hate to even give more attention to, but it just seems like people are saying, well, see, that's why she got in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like there should be more of, it just seems like she's held to a different standard than the multiple cases we've seen. Like Chris Watts, for example, that's a recent one. I mean, he was having an affair, but people didn't really, it didn't stigmatize him, although there was plenty of things that did stigmatize him. But I'm just trying to put into words here and I'm not doing a good job, but basically when we hear about a man having an affair, it's just handled differently. And I feel like, you know, poor Missy, even, you know, in the afterlife, she's wearing this scarlet letter that she doesn't even deserve. I mean, we don't even know if she had an affair. It's not fair for the media to take off on that, report it like it's fact. And, you know, I just think as far as the gender bias goes, and, you know, Tim was listening to a particular podcast. It's called Jensen and Holmes. And it's a really good podcast. Okay. I was saying his name wrong. Okay. I should have reviewed his name before I got on here, but yes. And so he was saying that one of them, I think it was the investigator, was saying that Missy had affairs and was leading an alternative lifestyle. And I remember him saying that, and it really jumped out at Tim, and Tim was just like, what? I mean, there's no evidence that she was living an alternative lifestyle. That's taking it way too far. Even if she did have some flirtations with the opposite sex, or maybe did something behind her husband's back, we don't know. But even if that's the case, I would hardly call that an alternative lifestyle. I mean, he was making it sound like she's a swinger or something. I mean, there's just no evidence of that. And Tim made a really good point. Would they have characterized it that way, or even spent that much time, or even given it that much thought or attention, if it was a man that had an affair?
Right. We might have needed to talk about the way that people interpret things and the way people look at things, because that has, you know, they say it a lot of, you know, your upbringing, the people that influenced you in your life. I don't know, a lot of your education, all kinds of things have a role in the way you interpret things. And that means anybody, whether it be a female or a male. But we might have needed to name it that, because I was under the impression he meant something completely different about what we're talking about. So I'm going to tell you what I thought, and then we can, I guess, figure it out from there. But
yeah, please do.
I was under the impression that he was talking about, has the case been influenced in any way by the fact that it was pretty much predominantly all men that handled the case of Missy, and how they interpreted the things that went on, which could actually be sort of what you're talking about. Like, for
instance, yeah, I agree.
All men, you know, looking at it, and they're kind of like, oh, well, she had affairs or whatever. But I guess I was looking at it in a different realm, like, where they're not thinking like a woman. So maybe they're not, you know, because they're not women, but they're not thinking right, like a woman would think. So they're not able to, what am I trying to say? Cover every facet of this case. So in other words, the men play an important part, but women play an important part as well. And when it comes to something as complex as this case, I think that they should have men and women handling it, so they can pretty much cover all their bases, if that makes any sense.
Now, there is a woman, a female investigator working Missy's case. I can't think of her name right now, but she was the one that replied to my email. Remember the infamous email where I asked them to contact the gate analysis company?
Right.
And they were like, we got it, ma'am. But anyway, that was a female. And I think she's the one that came from DeSoto PD. And anyway, I don't know her name right at the moment, but yeah, maybe, but she's, I'll look it up on my old emails. But anyway, yeah, she's working the case. You know, I agree though. I think early on, maybe they sort of went down the wrong road because they're putting too much significance on potentially there being an affair or not. I don't know. We just know, I know, I feel like I say this every single podcast, but we just know so little about this investigation. Which actually leads me to the next point is Tim had noticed, you know, he watched the 48 hours that we watched about the Sandra Garner case.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed a woman's name on there who was a journalist that he had spoken to, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, and about a particular POI in the Missy Beavers case that Tim was researching. And somehow, I don't know if he saw her post on Web Sleuth or what it was, but she reached out to him apparently back then. And so he saw her name as one of the people that was behind the 48 hour show about the other local case that we went over on the last podcast, which was Sandra Garner. And so he decided to reach out to her and he said, "Hey, are you still covering the Missy Beavers case?" And she wrote back and said, "Well, MPD refuses to do any on-camera interviews, so it's difficult to do a whole episode when they basically aren't cooperating." She didn't word it that way, but that's basically what it means. They're not cooperating with, you know, the media. So, you know, what's that all about? You know, that is, and honestly, nothing against Claire. I don't know her personally, this journalist we're discussing, and I don't really know her work that well, but I would just think that that's an opportunity when the police say, "No, we're not doing any more interviews." I kind of feel like that's when the real journalism starts. That's when you start saying, "No, I mean, we have questions. The public deserves to know what's going on. There's a homicidal maniac on the loose and people need answers." And so I just think it's just real convenient when the government just says, "Nope, we won't be asking any questions." I mean, that's what our journalists are for, is to break through that, find out why. If you really can't get them to talk, then go to ex-police officers from Midlothian Police, ask them what they think's going on. Why do you think MPD's not talking?
Right.
And, you know, go to the district attorney's office, go to the people who are running for DA. They're going to have a new DA here before too long. And I think in January, right? So, So I would think that that would be an opportunity for journalists to really do some digging. You've seen this where there's journalists outside of police departments someone comes out and they just say, "Hey, would you like to answer some questions? Are you still refusing to talk to the media?" You know,
right.
I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, why is the media, I'm not picking this woman out, it's everybody. Why has the media been so, they just give up easily. They've just been so laid back about this case. And I just think there's a lot of opportunity there really and truly, if a journalist wants to make a name for themselves, this would be the case. It's a high profile case. It's fascinating. Even if you don't live in the area and you're not connected to any of the people, you're not connected to Missy in any way, it's still a fascinating case. And I would think that this would be career making for a good journalist. You know, if you put this story in a Truman Capote type writer's hands, I mean, this would make an incredible book. I mean, where is everybody? I'm just kind of confused. Why aren't people asking questions? Why aren't people holding the police accountable?
I know. It's so funny because I actually asked that very same question about, I don't know, maybe about 4 months ago. I was like, please don't start with your same old, you know, news that we've been hearing for the last 4 years on April 17th or 18th. And I say that because there's always one that jumps the gun and gets it done the day before the anniversary of her death.
Right.
And say the same old stuff. Actually get some information, talk to some people, actually do some work, because we don't want to hear the same old story that we've been hearing for 4 years. We want to hear what you're actually doing to try to solve this case, what you're trying to do to get people to talk. You know, we want some answers. We don't want to just hear the same story, because we've already heard it so many times we could recite it ourselves.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear the same old thing. And also, you know, they do owe us some kind of answers. Now, they don't have to say, "Here's who we're looking at," and blow their cover and all that stuff. That's not what we want. We just want to know, do you really have someone in mind, or are you still wondering if it's a man or a woman? I mean, there's a lot of space in between those two.
Yeah.
And we honestly don't know where law enforcement stands on this case at all. And I think that's ridiculous after 4 years, especially those of you, I'm no longer in the southern suburbs of Dallas, but you guys that are still down there, I mean, you're potentially in a lot of danger. I mean, I don't understand how this is okay to not update the public.
Well, you know, the last time I remember hearing them say something about it, I think they quoted something like this, because we don't even know if it's a man or a woman. Like, half the department thinks it's a man and half the department thinks it's a woman. We're like, oh, well, that's exciting.
That's pretty much half of all the Facebook groups think it's a man and half think it's a woman. I mean, that doesn't tell us anything.
It's like, okay, I mean, well.
That, you could do a man on the street interview in Ellis County and probably get the same results. That's really nothing. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
And then also, you know, I don't want them to give anything away, but they need to update us. They need to let us know. And it would be really polite of them. I know I said this on the last podcast, but it would be very polite of them to at least tell us, are we still supposed to be searching for the Nissan Altima?
You remember the last time they updated their little it wasn't a press conference. What was it that they did? Something. And they even included, it could be a 2010 to 2012 light colored Nissan Altima, or remember added the other car. And I was like, are you kidding? You've done added another car in there. And I mean, just taking a quick glance at the car, it was an Infiniti G something. No, that was not an Infiniti. I don't know what their game plan was by adding that car in there, but it just made us even more frustrated, because we're like, oh, so now after 3.5 years, you decided to throw this new car in there, you know, that it might possibly be that car, and why,
you know? Well, and I know I'm circling back and ranting about past stuff that I've already ranted about, but this seems like a good place to throw it in for those of you who haven't heard our podcast before. If this is your first time to tune in, there was, in a December 2016 search warrant from Midlothian Police Department that was executed on a POI, a person of interest. And one of the articles of probable cause that allowed them to execute this warrant was that the person drove the same type of car that was seen leaving the church that morning, leaving the scene of the crime. And it was a small dark SUV. And why MPD kept that from the public is totally beyond me. It was in that search warrant. They knew about it because, from what we've heard, there was a passerby and a Camp Gladiator participant, at least one of them, that also confirmed that. So that sounds like good, solid information that could have helped the public lead to this perpetrator. Maybe even that day. I mean, why did to this day, they have never released that to the public about the small dark SUV, but it was so important that it was in the probable cause for the search warrant affidavit. What's up with that? What do you think is going on with that?
I mean, just more of their, you know, hush hush, you know, not wanting to tell the public enough. And I think it stems from them not being, you know, 100%. Well, I say 100% certain. I feel like it's because they're not absolutely sure that they have the right person. So they're just, you know what I'm saying? They're just, well, let's just check it out and see, and not really say anything, because we're not 100% sure that this is who it is. Because they were getting tips from people basically just all across the board. I mean, it was just, it's this woman, it's this man, it's this woman, it's this
true
woman.
So I mean
that's why I think they didn't.
But aside from any one particular POI, that piece of information about a vehicle seen leaving the scene right after the murder, why is that piece of information about that car not been made public? I don't understand that. They asked us to look for the Nissan Altima that was across catty corner across the street 2 hours before the murder, but they didn't ask us to look for the small dark SUV that was fleeing the scene of the crime right after it occurred. That just blows my mind. Maybe they didn't have enough information. Maybe, but still, I mean, a small dark SUV, you know, exiting the church at 4:30 in the morning and going down 287, I assume, I just would think that that was something the public should know about. And it's just sort of mind-boggling, because if you take that piece of information, I mean, this sounds like they're fairly certain that that was the perpetrator driving that small dark SUV. I'm sure that when they got there and did the research, they realized nobody else left. You know, there was just people arriving. There was no janitorial staff leaving. You know, it that had to have been the perpetrator. So why did they not tell us that? I mean, I realized they probably didn't have a license plate number. It was raining and no one knew there was a murder. So they didn't know they were supposed to try to chase the person down and get the license plate, because you don't know that type of thing until you know about the murder. So the people that observed that car fleeing the scene did not know a crime had occurred, but they did notice that there was a car leaving the church at an unusual hour. And I'm sure for the Camp Gladiator participants, they were thinking, that's weird that someone would be leaving. You're supposed to be arriving about now, but whatever, you know. Yeah. They probably told themselves it was a janitor or someone that left something at home or someone that changed their minds or someone turning around. I mean, I could see, you know, giving yourself any reason. I would just be sitting there congratulating myself for being there that early in the rain. I wouldn't be worrying too much about people coming and going, honestly, until it was time to get out of the car. And that, so anyway, you know, I'm really baffled about that, about keeping really important information from the public that could lead to an arrest, you know, potentially. Because if you know someone, like let's say your neighbor was gone all night, you saw him pull in a small dark SUV and you're thinking, that's weird. I wonder where he was at this hour. And then they might be acting a little strange and you know that they own some cop gear. I mean, that could help you lead to the killer. Just that piece, that extra piece of information about the car. You know what I mean?
Right.
That just kind of, I've never seen a case where they've done that I'm aware of.
Well, and it probably falls back on the fact that, you know, we've said this 1,000 times probably, and we'll probably say it 1,000 more, but it probably falls in the category of inexperience, because you know, you can call it a definite blessing that there aren't rarely ever murders in Midlothian, you know, the last one being what, 9-10 years ago. And then before that, a couple years. And then before that, it was another like 10 or 15 years, I don't, 10, 12 years, I guess. So they don't have enough experience. So that part is obviously a plus. You know, nobody wants to live in a community where there's murders all the time, like you're in Chicago or something. But at the same time, they need to be able to handle it when they do get them, or be able to accept the help that they would be able to have with the Texas Rangers, the FBI, you know, whoever it is, that whatever department that they would be able to get help from to be able to help solve the crime, and offer them tips and equipment that they don't have and things like that. They, you know, they should have taken it. And from my understanding, they didn't. And that's where all of this goes astray.
Well, yes. And the FBI has assisted. From what we're understanding, the Texas Rangers were sent away early on by MPD. You know, even better, I think, is, you know, that show that you were watching a while back. It was, I think it was like a small town in the Midwest, I think Ohio somewhere. And they got a murder case that looked complicated. And they said, we're going to hand this over to the Attorney General's office.
Yep.
If Midlothian police would have done that, this case would belong to the Texas Rangers. And there's a big difference between leading a case and assisting. Yep. I promise you, if they were leading this case from the very beginning, I think we would have different results right now.
Oh, I do. Absolutely do. I think that, you know, they were overwhelmed. They were not prepared. They didn't have the right equipment to handle, you know, the crime scene. There were so many things that they weren't able to do. And just like, and I hate to say it, but just like in the case in Maypearl of Sandra Garner, and that officer was, and I say, bless his heart, he was, you know, he admitted it. I messed up, you know, and it again, it comes from not being able to, it was his first time to ever lead a crime scene. he had worked on before, but he had never led one. And
Yeah.
he messed up. He there was things he didn't do. I mean, he lost pitchers. He didn't take I think that he didn't bag her hands for the gun residue. I mean, there was mistakes that were made.
Yeah.
And again, that is because they don't have the experience. And it's not talking bad about them. It's not talking down to them. It's just a fact. You don't have,
Yeah.
you're not in a town where there's murders every other week that you have, a lot of experience doing. And therefore, you're going to need the outside help. You're going to learn.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Yeah.
it's so sad that they can't, in my opinion, get past that and try to quit being the hero and actually let's get this case solved. Let's not care about who solves it, but let's get it done right. Because this family deserves justice. They deserved and the community deserves justice. They deserve to know that this person is behind bars and you don't have to worry about it. I mean, gosh, people, like you said before, there's people that don't even want to pick up
Hey.
the trash.
Hey, look, yeah, exactly. There is no shame in not having enough experience to do a
Exactly.
challenging case. They should have just said, hey, we would like to continue to assist, but we would like to hand this over to the Attorney General's office. That would have been the right thing to do, in my opinion, because obviously 4 years later, they're acting like they're no closer than they were. I
Yeah.
hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're on the brink of making an arrest, but I just kind of feel like we're at the 4 year mark. I'm just really concerned that that's not the case. And I mean, I'm a residential real estate agent, and if someone came to me and asked me if I could work a commercial deal, I probably could, but it's not my specialty. I would refer that out and take, I would refer it out because I don't think I could do it as well. I could handle any residential case, but I don't feel like I could work a commercial case. And I feel like MPD has worked a lot of cases. I'm certain, and they've been very successful over the years, but they haven't done a really complicated murder like this before. And, it's just not easy. I think there are probably very seasoned detectives on New York PD, Chicago PD that would struggle with this case.
And back to our what we were talking about in the beginning about the case and being most of the police officers being male and knowing seeing it was a female and hearing that she had had affairs and stuff. I feel like they definitely, with the tips that they had coming in, I feel like that they seen that and they thought, okay, she was cheating. This is a slam dunk, This is we got this is simple. This is going to be solved. I mean, and even I think it was Kevin Johnson that said it. I think it was him that said it, and you might remember. I think it was like 1 year later, exactly on the anniversary, and they did another press conference, and he said, if you would have asked me, I forget how he said it, but if you would have asked me last year if we
Yes.
would still be trying to investigate this crime and solve this murder today, I would say you were crazy. They thought they had it. They thought they had the person. They thought, just because, they had been told these different things about Missy, that it was going to be solved and they had it figured out. And
I remember
unfortunately,
that. He
yeah,
said that more than once.
he
He said that
did.
on another, he said that on a couple of different shows. And I remember, looking back on that, I kind of feel like they didn't even probably realize they were in over their heads when they decided to take this on. They probably thought, we've got this perp on camera for half an hour off and on. We're going to solve this thing. And I think in their defense, I think that it just was way more complicated than they expected it to be
Yeah, I agree.
initially.
I agree.
And something else, I'm glad you brought that up about Kevin Johnson, because he was their spokesperson. Even though he was assistant police chief, he also served as the spokesperson. And I remember when he, if you realize, when he left, it seems like them talking to the press just sort of stopped.
Yeah. Well,
And
because
they shouldn't have done that.
most of the people that were working the case, though, are gone. So I can kind of see why. I mean, I'm not saying that I agree with it, but I can kind of see in my mind why they'd be like, I'm not saying anything. I wasn't even here when this happened. I don't know, I don't know.
Well, and when Andy Vaughn came on, I remember, and I'll have to try to look for this again. It just popped in my head, but there was an article, or something I watched where it said that I had asked Andy Vaughn for his comments, and he said that he wasn't comfortable being on camera, which I totally get that. I wouldn't be thrilled about being on camera either. I just, some people just aren't comfortable. And being interviewed on camera and talking on camera. And if that's the case with Andy Vaughn, that's great. That's fine. It just seems like they would be able to find someone to replace Kevin Johnson, who was more of the spokesperson for the department. I don't really feel like they ever replaced him because they just went quiet after he left. And I don't blame anyone for being uncomfortable, not wanting to talk to the public. And if that's not your thing, and if your public speaking is not your thing, that's great. That doesn't mean you're not a good investigator, but they really should try to find someone to slip back into that role. It might be as innocent as that. They may not be, you know, wanting to shut down public communication at all. It might just simply be that they haven't replaced their guy that was out front. And maybe it's time to do that because, you know, the public deserves answers regardless of what's behind them not updating us, you know.
Yeah, it was Kevin Johnson that said that. And it was, he said, if you told me 2 years ago that we would be talking mm-hmm. about this case and it's still unresolved, I would have thought you were crazy that it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and he said that. And he said it. Yeah, he said it in more than one show. I remember that because I remember we were laughing about, oh, it's like he like practically said the same exact word.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like they replaced it with one and two.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, you know, and the only thing that we can do, and that was the whole point of our podcast, is to keep this case, you know, on the forefront so that people can hear about it and hopefully somebody will, because, you know, once a case is just dies down, it becomes cold and people aren't talking about it anymore, then the murderer relaxes. They're like, okay, well, I got away with that, you know? So I don't have to worry about that anymore. Of course, we know that's not the case. We hear about cases all the time where, you know, like that one guy, he had gotten away with killing his wife. I don't know. It was like 28 years. And they literally arrested him in the Walmart parking lot. I mean.
Where was that, locally?
No, it was in another state. It was a case. And I'm sorry, I said it and I can't think of who it was. But it was a man that had killed his wife and they investigated him and did everything, but there was something they missed. And then a team of investigators went in and redid all the evidence and everything. And they literally figured out it was him and had the ability to prove it. They got a search warrant and they literally arrested him in the Walmart parking lot. So, you know, he was surprised because it'd been 28 years. He was
crazy.
But anyway, I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, that's the whole point of keeping this case in the limelight so that people, you know, somebody might remember something, they might, you know, they might jog their memory. I mean, just keeping it alive is the ability to keep, to get, if you're more able to solve it if it just, you know, stays in the public's eye and they're hearing about it consistently versus just disappearing for good.
Yeah. You know, we had talked about segueing our gender conversation into whether or not we think that the perpetrator is a man or a woman, or what makes people think it's a man or a woman. And, you know, one of our friends from the groups made an interesting point. You might remember this. I think we talked about it. But he had said that they served a search warrant on a male. Mm-hmm. Right, the person of interest for the December 2016 search warrant that we refer to sometimes, mm-hmm. Who drives a small dark SUV. That POI, we'll call him. He that's a man. And you know, the person that our friend made the comment that they had DNA, and they went after a male. So that proves to him that MPD knows, that law enforcement knows that it's a male. Now, I thought that was very interesting. And I have a very limited understanding of DNA and an even more limited understanding of what exactly did they get from the crime scene and where did it come from. But what do you think about that? That mixed and partial DNA that they got, do you think they were able to determine, you know, part of it was Missy's DNA and part of it was the perpetrator's and it was a male? Because that actually did kind of make sense. I just don't know if I have enough information to really understand if that's what's happening here. But what do you think about that, that they went after male because the DNA had determined that it was a male?
You know, I've never thought of those two as being connected. And I know that's going to sound weird, but I know that they had DNA, but I think that they went after the person or the POI that you're speaking of in the December 2016 search warrant because of tips they received. I don't think it had anything to do with the DNA. I think the partial and mixed sample that they were able to get, in my mind, and from what I've researched on the internet and looked up, because it is confusing, I believe it was not enough of a sample that they were able to get, and it was mixed. So they could tell that it wasn't from just one person. It was from more than one person. That's what.
So you don't think that they were saying, okay, this is mixed DNA. So one of them we can identify as probably as Missy. And then we don't know who the other belongs to, but it appears to be a male. So you don't think anything like that was that specific?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the fact that it wasn't enough, I don't think they're able to tell anything from it. I think that they can tell that there's, because, and the reason I say some of this is because I've actually had a DNA test done before. I've actually had several DNA tests done. Because I was adopted and looked for my family, and I found a person that I believe was my relative, my brother. And right. So we got a test, and it took me a while to get a copy of the test, but the test came back with 0.000592, whatever, some weird number, percent chance that you're related. So I thought that was kind of strange. So I talked to several people about this, people that were experts in the field of DNA and, reuniting people with their family members and so forth. And the chances of you coming across a person that you have absolutely no alleles that are the same are even smaller than that number.
Okay.
Okay. So like if you tested, the chances of us coming back with zero of anything the same are slim to none. I mean, does it mean it's like when you're related to somebody, it's going to show like a 95 or 97 or a 98 or 92, or, it could even be a 90 percentage, but that means you're related. You just have different alleles that you got from different parents or different relatives. It's kind of, I don't know if I'm going to explain it correctly, but anyway, so my point of saying that is me and him had several of the same alleles, but it wasn't. I don't know. I have a hard time explaining it. I'm one of those people that sometimes I understand things, but I have a hard time explaining it. And I'm not saying that I'm right, because I'm absolutely not an expert, but that's not the way I understood it. I understood it that it was mixed, and they literally couldn't get anything from it, because in my opinion, if they could get that it was a man, then they could get enough of something from it to be able to tell something about this person, whether it's.
See, that's my question is, can they find out the gender of the person in question in a partial DNA? Cause see, there was two separate issues. It was partial and mixed.
Yeah.
And could they find, if they can determine gender, but nothing else or not much else? I was just curious if, I had not thought of that until our buddy in the groups brought it up. And he seems pretty convinced that that would be enough. Of course, I don't know what he's basing that on, and I don't know enough about it to know if he would even be right or wrong. But I thought that was really interesting that he's pretty convinced that the DNA determine the gender of the perpetrator, and therefore that's why they haven't been going after females. So that's interesting. We'll have to look into that some more and see what we can find out.
Well, the reason that I have a reason to not know that to not think that is accurate is because we don't know what they got. We have no idea what they got as far as DNA. We don't know how much they got, and so it would be hard to I don't know. It's just my opinion that I think that they went after the person, the POI from 2016, because of tips that they received and
the other similarities laid down in the search warrant. Yes.
Yeah. So that's just my understanding, and I could definitely be wrong, but that's just the way I have understood it and thought,
because, because apparently DNA coding, it determines, I mean, they can, from what I understand, and I need to learn a lot more about DNA before I talk about this again, but apparently they can, the DNA coding has the genes present for the chromosomes, and so they can see if it's the X or the Y
They can.
and
And
determine
that's
sex.
that's what I was fixing to tell you. And that test that I did with the possible brother, you can
Yeah.
tell on there that it shows that he's the male and I'm the female. So you can actually tell, them apart without them even coding them. This one's Renee's and this one's his.
Right.
So you can definitely tell from that. But I, like I said, I understood it that if you don't have enough, then you're not going to be able, it's not like, see if I can
Yeah.
explain this correctly. It's not like it when you get an answer. I have such a hard time explaining things, so bear with me. But when you get an answer, it's not like it's sort of an answer. It's either you get an answer or you don't get an answer. So you can't be like, okay, well, we can tell it's a male, but we can't tell anything else. If you can tell it's a male, you can tell everything about it. Does that make sense?
Yes,
Yeah.
absolutely.
It's like all or nothing. It's not like, okay, well, we almost made it through the DNA to find out that he had dark hair or blonde hair or blue eyes, but we didn't quite make it, but we can tell he's a male. I don't think it works like that. And like I said, somebody can prove me wrong, but to my understanding, from what I've, researched and looked at and seen over the years, it's either we didn't get enough to tell anything. There's no answers here because it wasn't enough. Or it was
Right.
enough and we tested it and we can tell this. Like I said, I don't think it's a halfway mark. I think it's you either got all the you got the enough DNA to tell all of the information you need, or you didn't get enough to do
Okay.
anything. But like I
So
said,
what you're saying is the DNA sample would not be able to determine the sex of the person if it's either all or nothing kind of a thing. Now, here's my next
that's
question.
my
Here's my
understanding.
next. Yeah, that makes sense. I know nothing, so I'm going to definitely go with what you're saying. Now, there's something called touch DNA, also known as trace DNA, and that's another forensic method for analyzing DNA from a scene of a crime. And the reason they call it touch DNA is because it only requires very small samples. For example, maybe just a skin cell left on an object after it's been touched or casually handled, or from footprints. So I understand that this perpetrator was covered from head to toe and did a very good job of covering themselves up with that thick gear. In many places, it's very thick, like the jacket area, and a helmet, everything. So what I would just love to know, what DNA did they find? I guess it's possible the perpetrator's hair could have come out from underneath the absolutely could have come out from underneath the helmet during a struggle, or maybe the skin was, touched on the perpetrator, that maybe a sleeve went up or something of that nature in the struggle. So I guess my question, and the reason I bring up trace DNA or touch DNA, is if it only requires an extremely small sample, microscopic sample, why on earth wouldn't that work in this case? Why did it? I don't know. It just sounds like they didn't even have enough to do touch DNA, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, and I have understood touch DNA to be more of like a piece of skin versus saliva or semen or blood. So I think that's the difference. But again, please don't think that I'm acting as a prof, like I know all of that, because I don't. I only know just little bits of it and understand it, and I could be understanding it wrong. But that's what I understood, is that if it's like a touch DNA is like a microscopic piece of skin, they can tell something different from that than they can from a, little tiny bit of saliva or a little tiny speck of blood or, a little bit of semen or something like that. I'm not 100% sure on that. So if anybody knows, please let us know.
Yeah, and I still want to get some clarification on whether or not a small sample can tell the gender, because right here I found something, and I'm just Googling here, people. This is nothing technical, but I did find an article that says sex. Underneath it, it says the simplest thing DNA can tell you is whether someone is a male or a female. Apart from some very rare cases, that doesn't even involve it looking at their DNA sequence. All you need to know is whether they have the X and the Y chromosomes making them male, or a pair of X chromosomes, which makes them female. And it says, you know, that's just very interesting. It almost makes it sound like they don't have to have a look at their DNA sequence, yeah. Which I don't scientifically know exactly how to describe that. But it sounds like, it says here, the simplest thing DNA can tell you is whether someone was male or female, apart from some very rare cases that doesn't even involve looking at their DNA sequence. Okay, so maybe our friend was right in the groups. That's something I want to look into further. And if I was smart, I would have asked him directly. I'll do that and see if he has any information on that. Because if that DNA did by chance determine the gender, but nothing else about the person, that, or not enough about the person, that would be very interesting.
Do you remember the date around the date that they talked about the DNA sample? Do you remember?
Well, they didn't even mention the DNA to the public until January or February of 2018. I think it was January. It was that Midlothian Light, I think it was, article. Remember
probably
that?
Because it took a while, I can imagine, because DNA testing does take a while. So that's probably why. Mm-hmm. But
I really think that they had the information though long before they released it, because they just released it. Remember, it was almost like a throwaway line. They just sort of mentioned it toward the bottom of an article about something else. The article was actually about the fresh set of eyes. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That Andy Vaughn was going to bring in new investigators, and they were going to really, you know, start all over fresh with the case. And then toward the bottom of the article, they're like, oh, by the way, we had some DNA, but it wasn't enough. It was partial and it was mixed and it wasn't enough. Well, you know, that actually, remember we talked about, that's actually big news. That should have been a headline somewhere, or at least given more attention than it was. Just, you know, being an aside in a local paper, I would have thought that would be at least the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, you know, kind of news. It just seemed buried in that local paper in Waxahachie. But anyway, I need to learn more. I don't really know anything about DNA other than what tiny little bit of information I've shared here, so, which is nothing. But, you know, something else we have to look forward to, and I know we said this before, was one of these days, it happens over the years, and I hope it'll continue to happen, is DNA technology does improve.
Right. All right, we're going to be back in just a few moments. We have to answer some questions that a listener sent in to us, so we'll be back in just a moment.
All right, Renee, you back? Awesome. Okay.
One of the things we forgot to talk about was the perpetrator. Is it a male or a female?
Oh, yeah. And what things make us think, what makes some people think it's a female, and what makes some people think it's a male. And there's a whole lot of people that don't know either way. What did you want to go ahead and start, or I can start? It's up to you.
Sure. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. So a couple of different things have been, we have read pretty much everything you can imagine about people's thoughts on whether the perpetrator is a male or female. Me personally, I can say I went back and forth on this whole video that you see, the surveillance video that they have on, you can find it on YouTube. It's under Midlothian, Texas Police Department. Because they first published a video of about, I don't know, 25 seconds or so. And then they added another one of like another 20 seconds or 30, 40 seconds, whatever. And then the very end, they did the complete one that they put together of 2 minutes and 26 seconds, I think it is. Anyway, so there's a couple different ones, but you can go on there and find it. And it's going to be under Midlothian Police Department's YouTube. Anyway, so in the beginning, it starts out with the perpetrator is walking down the hall, and they're kind of at the back of the screen, and there, to me, it kind of looks like a male the way they're walking. And then they start coming, that then they're showing you the same walk but on the other angle, and they're coming towards you, and they go in a room, they come out, And they go to this wall, and I say they come to this wall, they go to this door, and they're like, oh, it's locked. Well, let me try to get in here. So they start trying to break in the door, and their stance to me looks female. And they start ever so gently, and I say this every time, ever so gently tapping on the crowbar, whatever it is that they're using, trying to get into this room. And then the video jumps, and they're at this stance, two different times they're at a different stance, and that looks completely female to me. Then they walk across the room, again, complete female to me. The walk to me looks female, and I see hips, and I see the shoulders don't look broad enough to me. Just there's this many things, and these are some of the th same things that we've read, through this whole 4 years of people trying to figure out whether it's a man or a woman. And then, of course, there's some people that say it couldn't have been a woman because women don't kill like that. The feet, look, of course, the height, that's a big one. The height is 5'2" to 5'8" and plus or minus 1.43 inches. Is that right? Something like that.
Now, the latest one, I think they eliminated the 5'2" stuff. I think they're saying, I can't remember now. I should have reviewed it, but the top end was approaching 5'10". I think it was like the top end, I think, was 5'9¾". And I don't remember the new bottom end. I need to look at that again. There's been so many height ranges, but
I know it has changed so many
yeah,
times.
they finally backed off of that 5'2" to 5'7", which was the one they used for the longest time with that 5-inch spread.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so there's several different reasons why I see, and like I said, there's times in the video where I see a man, but in the majority of it, I see a female. So, and like I said, you hear all different kinds of reasons. You hear people, that is definitely a woman. That's definitely a man. That's definitely a man. That's definitely a woman. So it's kind of the same thing the police was saying across the board. What about you?
When I very, I haven't really focused on male versus female as much as I did the people I thought did it, more. And so then when I thought that there was a certain female, early on, I thought it, oh, maybe it could be that person. And then I started kind of, there's actually a couple of them, and I would look at the video and say, well, I could see it being them. But then as evidence came out later, and or, so as we did more research, then I started thinking, oh, that's him, So it's almost like I'm seeing the gender that I'm thinking of based on the information I'm looking at more than just the gender itself. But when I look at the video, I mean, it walks like a man to me. I understand there is a part where the perpetrator stands in front of that door when when he or she is pulling the tools out of the vest. You know what I'm talking about? And then they kind of stand there. It is an unusual stance. That is really and truly to me the only time that the perpetrator looks female. But I do know, I mean, I know a lot of men who have some effeminate mannerisms occasionally. And I know a lot of females, myself included, that will occasionally have some male mannerisms. Whether it be the way you walk or occasionally stand, or we all are kind of, no one's 100%, regardless of your sexual orientation. I'm not talking about that. I just mean, sometimes, genders will cross over. I know that sometimes I do sort of male things, but I'm primarily feminine, and and my husband's primarily masculine, but he'll do some feminine things sometimes. And and we had talked about how softly a lot of people I've noticed in the discussion groups will say, well, that's not a man handling that hammer, because a man would, really know how to whack a hammer. And the part of the video I'm talking about.
Yes, the
And
very end.
yeah,
Well,
and
I'm also
but
yeah.
I really, my husband said that he thinks that the perpetrator was trying not to get the glass. He was just trying to do enough damage to, you know, make a mark there to crack the glass, but didn't want it to blow back on him. Perhaps had had some experience with it breaking in and thought, I don't want to do that again.
Are you talking about the very end?
Yes, I'm talking about the part where he's coming out of room 10, and then all of a sudden there's that little kind of, people have said it looks like a lady doing it, just really, just sort of bare, like a lazy kind of whacking.
The way he brings his arm over and kind of pops the glass. But I will tell you, at the very end of it, and that's why I wanted to ask you where you were talking about. To me, it looks like after he breaks the glass, he puts his arm through the window area that he broke out.
Oh yeah, that's possible. So yeah, I can't really tell that. That's true. They might have done that.
He starts walking closer to the door once he gets it broken, or she gets it broken. They go closer to the door, and then it looks like they're putting their arm in, and then that's when they stop the video. So you can't really tell, but that's what it looks like to me. So I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, who knows? But I also tend to think it's someone who used to be a cop, has tactical experience, has worn that type of gear before. They look very comfortable in that gear. And then my head is full of information that I have a bias toward who I think did it, which makes the person look male to me. And then also, you know, and I like that guy, his name was John Bueller. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. If it's pronounced like Ferris Bueller, it's spelled slightly differently, but his name is John Bueller. And he was in that HLN show that we actually did a podcast episode about. And he was a retired investigator, and I've seen him on other shows. He's kind of like one of these talking heads that is on a lot of these shows. And his impression was, from his experience, that it was a male. One of the things he cited is the reason why he thought that is due to the extreme. It can't be violent. Of course, there's always the exceptions, but just across the board, more often than not, these cases of extreme violence usually come from a male. And I take that into account. And also, how incredibly it is, the sort of the effective quick delivery of the violence kind of makes me think that it's a guy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm texting you.
And I think that people, and I don't mean you, I mean, you know, across the board, anyone who says that a woman is not able to kill someone with that much force or anger or whatever is definitely underestimating a woman.
Oh no, trust me, you're right. I think I'm just looking at it from how efficient it was. I don't think that, for the most part, okay, there's always that asterisk next to everything. It's right. Not, nothing is absolute, but just statistically speaking, I just don't think that women can get that hot, that emotional, that angry, that violent, and then just leave and everything be okay. I feel like just this person went from 0 to 90 when Missy got there, because that person's just cruising around the church looking cool as a cucumber, and then bam, extreme violence. And then leaving and really just emotionless. And of course, women can also be psychopaths, of course, and not saying they can't, but I'm just saying that this perpetrator seemed to just sort of blend back into life, and his loved ones or his or her loved ones, people at work, nobody's really suspicious of this person because no one's turned him in. So I just kind of feel like, for me, that's more male, just the sort of like that Ted Bundy kind of a thing, or, you know, all the serial killers basically were able to just be like, oh, can you help me get the stuff into my car? And then bam, violent. And then go right back to what they're doing before, after brutally killing someone and no one knows anything, you know, better. Whereas women are more likely to be detected after something like that. And just less likely to be capable of that, even though some certainly are. I don't know. I just take all of that information and the way the perpetrator's walking, it looks very male to me, especially when they're going like across the camera and then going toward that Dutch door. You know, the Dutch door is the one that has the top and the bottom that open separately. A lot of churches have those to keep the toddlers from running out when the parents come to pick them up. And, right. You know, when he or she opens that top part of the Dutch door and looks surprised, I just feel like that all looked very male. The way that person moves and that little limp and the feet turned out, it looks masculine to me. I don't think that person is anywhere near 5'2". I don't understand. And I know I've ranted about this on prior podcasts and no telling how many times you and I have talked about it, but I don't think that the person was ever anywhere near 5'2". And I don't know why they gave us such a wide range, unless they just didn't want the public to know who they were looking at, or they didn't want the perpetrator to know they were being looked at. But I see a man when I look at that. With the only one exception is that sort of way that they stood kind of on one hip. You know what I'm talking about. I don't know how to describe that type of a stance, but it does look feminine.
Yeah, it's where they kind of like they're standing there and they're on one leg, their knee is kind of bent, kind of like a you know, like with their hips kind of pushed out, yeah, and their knees kind of bent, you know, kind of like that. Yeah, that's I agree with you on that one. And I think that's why we have even seen, there's been some people speculate that there was more than one person at the church. And I think that's why, because there's times when you see, you know, a female stance or a female walk or a female, you know, shape of the body. And there's times when you see, you know, male. I predominantly see a female in those things for the most part throughout the whole video. And, you know, of course, we know you see a male. And that's why we, you know, like I said, we see people saying, well, I think there's two people there.
Yeah, interesting. I really feel like MPD would tell us that there was more than one perpetrator. But who knows? I mean,
like they've told us everything else.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it just seems really unlikely that there's two people simply because they haven't been caught yet. If there's more than one person involved in something of this magnitude, then the likelihood of getting caught goes up exponentially with each person that gets added. So, I mean, it would be way more likely that there would have been arrest by now if there was two people that you had to trust to keep their mouth shut and not make any mistakes. So I tend to believe MPD on that one, that there was just one, but who knows? Yeah. And we always say, hopefully we'll find out someday, but for now it looks like we're still in the dark. After 4 years of this, that's incredible. I mean, that's like a college experience. That's, you can put your child through high school. I mean, 4 years is a long time.
It really is. I mean, you know, I feel like if they would you know, let some outsiders come in, and there's plenty, I mean, I've said this before, plenty of organizations that are made up of very experienced retired investigators that literally donate their time to go through and completely start over and work on a case, you know. And I feel like they felt like they knew who it was. And I feel like that's where they failed. I really do. I think that you have to explore all your options no matter what, because that's where most investigators make mistakes. Just like this, you know, this officer, unfortunately, that handled that case in Maypearl, you know, I feel like, you know, along with inexperience, I feel like they thought they had it in the bag, like she's guilty. And, you know, we're just going to do what we normally do, or what we have learned to do, whatever it is. And, you know, it's just a slam dunk, and that's not the way it was at all,
right?
As we see.
And maybe the Ellis County DA's office learned a big lesson from that, and they are being more cautious with this case because it's not as simple. And I think it's also possible that they know exactly who did it, and they don't think it's anyone else simply because the evidence all points to one person, but it's circumstantial. And this is a capital murder trial and a very high profile one. I think they know they're going to have a lot of evidence. It can't just be, oh, the person drives a similar car and, you know, or whatever, you know. I think it's going to have to be, unfortunately, it looks like they didn't get the right DNA, but the right DNA sample. But I really think that whatever they, I think it's very possible they know who did it, but they don't have the right kind of evidence, you know, because there's that legal, you know, it has to rise to the level, the legal definition of evidence. And it also has to not just be all circumstantial. They may have a huge pile of circumstantial evidence, but nothing that would really convince a jury to convict. And that's what they have to have. They can't.
You know what's crazy is I agree with you on the capital murder, obviously, because it falls absolutely in that category. But in almost every document we see from the police, they have marked out capital. And I have not been able to figure that out. Of course, I would have to actually ask them, like, why did you mark out capital? I'm just curious why.
I remember seeing that on a document. Which one was that? Do you remember?
It's not just one. It's several.
Okay, interesting. I don't know why they did that if they don't want the public. Was it? You mean it was redacted?
The evidentiary search warrant on, let me see, the iPhone, the iPad, they marked out capital. The one for, I believe, the Facebook search warrant, they marked out capital. The AT&T target numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if they marked out capital on that one. I don't know that it, no, it just says murder. There's no capital. They didn't even put it in that one. They didn't even, you know, they didn't have to mark it out.
I don't know why they would mark that out unless they don't want people knowing that yet. But it's kind of funny if you redact that. You almost know exactly what's written there.
Why are you worried about marking it out when that is absolutely the law? I mean, look up the penal code. You're going to see that is, without a shadow of a doubt, capital murder. I mean, they committed murder. They pre-planned it, obviously, and because they're sitting and waiting, and they committed another crime on top of it. That is capital murder without a shadow of a doubt. So, I don't know. It's crazy. I don't understand it.
Oh,
wow. Absolutely crazy.
This is kind of funny to think that they would mark out capital when we could all figure out that's what the word would be, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't mark it out where you couldn't tell what it was. They marked it out like they changed their mind.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Like that's what I'm seeing, because I can tell it says capital. They marked it out. So I'm just, I never really understood that. And I've often wondered, and I've ran it across a few people, and nobody seemed to have any ideas, because I thought, well, maybe there's something I'm missing, you know?
Yeah, it's just yet another part of this that we can't really make a lot of sense out of.
Yeah, because I can't imagine, you know, you haven't even gotten into, you don't even know who did it. You can't decide you're not going to charge them with capital murder.
Yeah.
That's not even making any sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And maybe they were afraid that that would give away some part of the investigation, but I don't see how.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, you'd have to be, I don't want to sound rude, but you'd have to basically not understand criminal justice to not charge them with capital murder. I mean, or not be able to read what it's to do.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I really don't understand why they did it either. So I guess that's just another one of the mysteries. Add that to the list.
No kidding. But
the list is long, for sure.
Yeah, and I wish that we knew more. So hopefully we can find out more about DNA. I think that was something interesting that came out of today's podcast, is I would like to learn more about the DNA part, and can they tell the gender easily without knowing anything else about the DNA, or is a partial DNA means they can't tell the gender?
Speaking of that, you know, I do remember seeing an episode of some TV show where they were investigating a case that actually happened. It was true. And I remember them saying that we have DNA and we can tell that they have such and such eyes or something. I can't remember now. So I wonder.
That's wild.
You know, I wonder that, because that's interesting.
Well, you know, and I guess on a more, in a better DNA sample, you know, you hear about people reconstructing what the person looks like based on the DNA.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's pretty wild. So we need to learn more about that, because I'm just kind of curious. Is our friend in the group who said they, now he doesn't think that the POI that they went after in that search warrant in December 2016 is the one, but he thinks it's a male. But he was using that fact that they went after a male to prove his point that it's a male, because the DNA sample said it was a male. But I'm not sure that I'm ready to connect all those dots. I would like to know more. And then also, I think, don't we have questions and answers?
Yeah, I was just waiting on you to get done.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm just babbling. But yeah, we have a really, really nice lady who listens to our podcast, and she visits with us on Instagram and on our Facebook group. And she sent us an email with some questions in it. So you've got a copy of that, right, Renee?
Yes. And we want to apologize because we actually answered these questions about, I think it was one or two podcasts ago, but we had, for whatever reason, both of us had really bad connection issues. And both of us, whenever I was listening to the podcast before publishing it, I would be talking and she would be talking and neither one of us knew the other was talking. So we were literally, it was just really bad. So we decided to just scrap it and start over. And that's where those questions were. So we decided to just redo it on this podcast, which I think we've had a few tiny little problems because we can kind of tell it's cut in and out a few times, but I don't think it's anything like before. So that's why we're redoing this and it's taken us so long. So we apologize for that. But anyway, she writes to us and she says, "Hi, hello, ladies. I'm from Houston. I have listened to every podcast that you have done and I've enjoyed each and every one of them. I hate to say I'm enjoying them due to the subject matter. I have a couple of observations, questions, and requests for both of you ladies. Number one, has Brandon ever remarried? I have heard yes and no. To answer that question, yes, Brandon has remarried. The reason that we know this information is because someone, and I don't remember who, it's been a while back, someone researched that and posted it in one of the groups. I mean, neither one of us knew, nor were we even looking. And so when I seen it, I'm one of those people, and I know you are too, Crystal. I researched it to verify it, and it was true. So yes, he has remarried, and it has been verified.
Okay, yes, I agree with that. And I believe he married a little bit past the 3-year mark after Missy's murder. I want to say it was like 3 years and 4 months, not quite a year and a half after her murder. And to me, that's just unremarkable. It doesn't even make me bat an eyelash. I mean, most men statistically get married very quickly after a divorce or or being left a widower. Statistically, just because they don't want to be alone anymore. And I think that almost 3.5 years is certainly a long enough period of time. That doesn't raise any eyebrows to me at all.
Right. I mean, yes. You know, and especially with him marrying somebody that he's known for a long time, I think that, you know, they've known each other for a while. And so, you know, they probably just, you know, felt comfortable with each other and decided, you know, hey, let's just get married. So, yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely married. So, okay. So the second question is, why have we never heard from Missy's family, mom, dad, et cetera? My opinion on that is, you know, obviously we don't know her mom. Now her dad is deceased. He died, I want to say a year and something before her.
Yeah.
Cause I remember us researching and seeing some posts where, you know, she had talked about, you know, his death. And so that's why we don't hear from him, but her mom, we don't know. But I just take it that she's just one of those people. You know, some people handle things differently. Now, if something were to happen to a family member of mine, I would be one of those people that would be shouting from the rooftops. I want some answers. I want to know. You got to check this. You got to check that. That's just my personality. Okay. That's just the kind of person I am. I'm a go-getter. I'm one of those people that don't give up. I don't stop until I get the answers I want. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm one of those people, but everybody's not like that. And it doesn't make them a bad person. It doesn't make them a better person. It's just personalities. And that's just what I think of as far as her mom. She just seems to be quiet and to herself and grieving. And she just chooses not to, you know, say anything or get in the front of a camera or whatever. So that's just what I feel like. I don't know her and I don't know this for a fact. I've never heard from her. I've never talked to her, but I'm just kind of getting that vibe. What about you, Crystal?
Oh yeah, I agree with that for sure. I think that, and also we don't know, Missy's mother could, and she, from what I understand, still lives in the Jacksboro area. Missy is from Jacksboro. She's not, she was not originally from Ellis County. And she has a mother and two brothers, and her, of course, her dad's been deceased. I think he died a year or two before she was murdered. And You know, I just think that we don't know. She could be talking to law enforcement every week, as far as we know. She just hasn't been public. She has not been in the media. I don't know if the media has tried to track her down in Jacksboro, Texas, or if she has just simply declined their interviews, or have they not attempted to go out there to talk to her. I don't know. But I would be the same way. I would not be on TV if a family member of mine was tragically murdered. I know that if I was murdered, my parents would not have been in the media talking about it. It's just a difference in style. I would want to grieve alone. I would certainly be interested in the case and be following it and wanting to learn more and being spending time with family. But I would not, I wouldn't have any need to be public about it. I've seen how that can backfire on people. Like poor Brandon, every time he's in the media, everyone shouts that he did it. And that time that his dad spoke to the media, everyone said that he did it. You know, I understand. I couldn't stand to be under that scrutiny at the same time that I was grieving a shocking death of someone close to me. I just couldn't do it. I wouldn't have the stamina for that. So God bless those people who do put up with that. But I would be the same way. I would be silent. So the only reason I'm talking about myself is just because I can project myself into Missy's mother and her two brothers' positions, and I would be just as quiet as they're being. And I know a lot of people think that maybe there's something going on there, but I don't think it's that at all. I think they're just upset, and they're obviously don't want attention, and they don't want to be in the public eye. And it's just a difference in styles. Brandon's family was a little bit outspoken toward the beginning. Of course, we haven't heard from them in a long time, with the exception of that headline news program last summer. But anyway, I took a long way to agree with you. I think that Missy's, her side of the family is just choosing not to speak because they just don't want to be in the public eye.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and I want to touch on that a bit. There was a case that I researched. Since we have so much time on our hands right now with the coronavirus and being quarantined and at home, shelter in place, I have lots more time to research other things when I, you know, I'm trying to find something to do. So I was researching this case I think it was my daughter brought it to my attention. Anyway, it's the case of Molly Miller and Colt Haynes. And I won't get into the case, obviously, but or maybe we will at a different time. But so everywhere you look, it's Molly Miller, Molly Miller, Molly Miller, Molly Miller. You never see anything about Colt Haynes. And he's missing just like she's missing. So her family are the ones that are, you know, speaking out. And it's actually the aunt, the one that, you know, maybe the mother's not able to do it. And who knows? I mean, I can imagine that would be extremely hard to do. So the aunt, you know, she's able to push forward and insist on, we got to get some answers, because the cops are just kind of like, we don't know, you know, we don't know what happened. So, like I said, you constantly see in the media and on, you know, Facebook groups and, you know, news conferences and articles that have been published in the newspaper and whatever, it's all about Molly Miller. And so I kind of looked at that and I thought, you know, it's really sad, because it wasn't just Molly Miller. It was Molly Miller and Colt Haynes that have been missing. And pretty much everybody believes that they're dead. They just don't know where they are, where they've been buried, or where they've been put, or what's happened to them. And it's really sad, because you don't see anything about him. And I mean, on one hand, it's sad, but on the other, maybe that's just the way his family is. They don't have the ability to push anything. They have to just, I guess, maybe move forward or something. I don't know, but it just kind of gives you an example of two different families. The same thing has happened to both of them, because the two were together when they ended up missing and have been gone for, I can't remember now. I think it was 2013. Right. So 7 or 8 years now. So two different families have handled it two different ways. And I'm sure his family loves and misses him just as much as the other family, but one family handles it differently.
And you see that also, good example of that, like on Facebook, social media in general, you know, you'll see people who, you know, somebody in their family stubs their toe and they're on Facebook going, please pray for so-and-so, you know, they've got a massive headache or whatever. But then, like, you know, the other example would be like the way I handle social media. My dad went in the hospital. He went, you know, into ICU. He came home on hospice and he passed away. And I didn't post anything until after he passed away. I'm not saying the way I did it's better, or the way other people do it is better. It's just a different style. It's a choice of privacy. And, you know, I know that my parents wouldn't want me putting their personal information on there. And I just, I'm the type of person, I'd rather grieve alone. I don't want to put things out there. And I kind of feel connected to Missy's family in that way. I can relate to that.
Yeah, I totally
but,
understand. I agree with
anyway,
you.
So what were we going to, oh, we have another question. That's right. What number was that? Was that number
yeah.
two?
Yeah, that was
Okay.
number two. Yeah, this is number three. Have you guys ever approached anyone at MPD and asked for an interview or statement? It might be a long shot, but she basically says she follows the case. And some people that have researched it and really spent a lot of time on the case has actually talked to law enforcement there locally. And so, I mean, I'm going to give my perspective on it. We have not approached MPD. We have not asked for an interview or a statement. I don't think that they're going to even give us the time of day. I don't know any other way to say that. They're going to go, and you are...
Well,
and who, you know, we're just two people that have talked about a case and shared lots and lots of information and ideas and thoughts and everything you can imagine. And, you know, that's just my opinion. I mean, I know we're the public and I think public does deserve answers, but I don't think they're going to go, oh, well, let me just tell you what we think. They're not, just the way I feel. So I'm not even,
I agree
with
you. And there's two separate things I see here. Number one is MPD's made it clear. And I mean, Kevin Johnson told us in early press conferences and interviews that we're not, or press releases and interviews, we're not going to tell you everything. I mean, he's straight up
right.
told us that several times. So I'm, you know, and then, so I don't really think I'll be able to pick up the phone and get a lot further than anyone else would by talking to them. And then on the other aspect of that is, unfortunately, some lunatics from the social media groups have contacted MPD, and sometimes they've even pestered them. And I heard that there was some people have actually called their families and stuff. I mean, that is just weird. And it makes the whole public following this case look bad. And it would make them be suspicious of anybody that would pop in and ask a question or make a suggestion. So I kind of don't blame MPD, because for some weird reason, the Facebook groups brings out the crazies. And they've unfortunately been faced with those people very close up. I mean, you know, like contacting them frequently, and they don't have time for that. And I can understand why they would be seeing us all through that same lens after being harassed by those people. So I think that the people we've talked about in the groups that have just acted a little crazy, that's kind of ruined it for all of us, because I would think, you know, I really think that if we were to call and try to ask questions, I'm not sure we would get anywhere anyway. But if we even had a prayer of getting anywhere, I think it was ruined by that type of activity early on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It was unfortunate, because I think that a few of the conversations they had, they were actually very polite, and I think they handled it way better than I would have.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, and when I answer these questions and say, absolutely not, please don't be offended, I'm just, you know, giving you my true answer. But I mean, it's a great question. And
oh,
I wish we could.
I really do. If I had any kind of media credentials, I would do it. But I think that as an amateur podcaster, concerned citizen, I don't think I'll get anywhere. But if I had any kind of, you know, actual media credentials, I would be all over MPD. So...
I've heard stories about police departments that have volunteers that go in and work and do things to help, you know, with cases. And it might just be, you know, verifying things for them or who knows what. And I don't think that MPD has that, because if they do, we would be right there front and center. Hey, we'll help you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because we truly do want to help with the case. I mean, whatever help that may be. But we don't think that they would even, you know, they would even.
No, the people I emailed them, they got rid of me really fast. We talked about it in a previous podcast. And the couple, there's a handful of normal people that we know that have contacted MPD, and they have not gotten anywhere. I mean, they're just not talking to the public. And I mean, I understand that.
Right.
We are part of the public. So they've already announced we're not telling the public anything. So if we call and ask questions, like, we already told you, we're not going to tell you anything. So,
yeah, so don't even try. All right. So that was question number three. This is number four. I have heard that Missy was afraid of a certain local person. Do you have any firsthand knowledge of that? And they don't mention any names. They just ask. Yes, I have heard several people. We've heard so many rumors, first of all, of that if we had one of those dry erase boards, and I'm talking the size of a garage door, it would be filled from one end to the other. But I'm pretty sure I know who this person is referring to. And I've heard this, but we can't substantiate it with anything other than a rumor.
I agree with
so
you.
I agree with you.
We don't have anything but internet rumors. So I'm going to say no to that question, because I heard in a Facebook group that somebody asked her daughters if she was afraid of someone. I think it was an investigator, and they said, oh yeah, so-and-so. That's never been confirmed or corroborated by anybody at all. And it's strictly, I've only seen that myself in the rumor mill. So I'm not even going to acknowledge that. I'm just going to say no to that answer.
And we know how rumors go. You know, you'd say one thing, you know, I'm going to the store, and before it gets to the fifth person, you're going to Dallas to buy a new tire for your truck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's bizarre. It's, I guess people have selective hearing, or they, once they decide to tell someone else, something gets added to it. And we've all done it. I mean, every single person I think on this earth has done it. And it's not that you mean harm. It's just, you don't remember exactly what they said. So you're like, oh, and she was upset, or, and maybe that's not even what the first person said. So yeah, we have
some of the rumors in the groups where people speculating, and then it gets legs. You know what I mean? It gets legs.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, one person speculated. Yeah. One person speculated this 2 years ago, presented it as fact, and now everybody in the groups is talking about it, and they're adding it to the facts list, where it's like, no, that's not a fact. That's not verifiable. Right. You know?
Yeah. The only way I would be able to say I had firsthand knowledge of that is if, you know, Brandon told me that himself, you know, and we didn't have that.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, so number five, I am sure that I heard MPD disclose that we're unable to find the creepy LinkedIn message. Yeah, that's true. They have not been able to. Now, according to what we have been told, so we'll go with that, and we're talking about press conferences and, you know, data that we've received. What else have we received? They have not been able to find the message. Let's say this. I think they found the message, but they couldn't figure out where it came from. That's what I think. That's what I read. Is that correct?
My understanding, yes, is that they know it was through LinkedIn, and they know it was a male profile. Now, of course, it could have been a man or a woman with a fake male profile, but the profile was a male's, and it was someone that Missy and her friend did not know. The friend who told him, you know, police about this could not remember the name that was on the account, but she confirmed that neither she nor Missy knew the person. It was a stranger, and the contents of the messages or message, singular, we're not sure which, were creepy and strange. Creepy and strange are the only adjectives we have ever heard. That's the only description we've ever heard about the mysterious LinkedIn message.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to have to backtrack here for just a second, because it just popped in my head and I want to share it while it's on my mind. Talking about the creepy message and the fact that it was basically from a male, how perfect would it be for a female to not only dress up to make themselves look bigger and dress like they were a man, so wear like something over their shoes to make their feet look bigger, you know, maybe stuff their clothing to make themselves look fatter, you know, more masculine, also to send a message from a male profile and make it look like it's being sent from a male. I mean, I'm sorry. It just popped in my head. I had to say that.
That's clever. Absolutely.
You know, that would be Perfect. I mean, for somebody to basically commit a crime and be exactly like they are would be kind of weird, but that's just my thoughts. But anyway, yeah, to answer that question, you were exactly right. They, in my, from what I understood, they found the message, but they could not figure out where it came from. They couldn't, pinpoint the IP address or
Yes.
whatever.
And that's
Yeah,
really odd,
so
isn't it? But that's true.
it is odd. But it kind of goes back to the
Right?
rumor that we heard again. I'm sorry to throw that in, but it does go back to the rumor that in the very beginning that everybody's always said that there was a burner phone. And I guess, those are harder to trace. They can trace them, but they are harder to trace, and it's a possibility that they wouldn't be able to trace it. And so that's a possibility that that's why. So, all right. So number six is, will either of you ever disclose who you think may be responsible? I know a name that has been bounced around everywhere online that you have explicitly said you don't feel is involved in any way, which, no, that's the end of the sentence. Sorry, I was reading the wrong line. Anyway, okay, so no, I will never disclose who I think it is for a couple of reasons. I honestly don't have one particular person in mind that I think did it. I mean, as you have already heard in this podcast, this episode, and I know I've done it on other episodes, I am not 100% on female or male. I do tend to lean more towards female, for the most part. There was even a time when I thought there was more than one person, and I'm not 100% sure that there isn't. So, I can't say who I think may be responsible because I wouldn't know who to say. I'm that stumped by this. I don't have one person. I have people that I have, thought, that's a possibility, but I wouldn't feel comfortable saying anything because I may change my mind tomorrow. So
And my answer to that is I would not disclose it publicly because, number one, I wouldn't want to mess up the case in case I'm right, or if I'm wrong, I wouldn't. My place to announce who I think it is. And I will discuss it with people offline or in private conversations because I have many times. But no, I'm not going to say it on the podcast or anything like that for sure. But I mean, I feel like I've got a pretty good idea who it was, and I think that MPD has a pretty good idea who it was, but I can't prove it. They can't either, apparently. It's been 4 years, so I have a strong inclination, but I of course I can't say I certainly know who did it.
I wouldn't suggest that. I mean, and I've heard and I've seen people have posted, crazy stuff on the internet. And I'm like, I
Yeah.
couldn't do that for many
And
reasons. I mean, but
why?
I wouldn't, wouldn't you feel horrible if you said that somebody did it and then it comes out that they didn't, and you were over here making people skeptical of
Yeah.
them or afraid of them, or maybe even lost a
Yeah, why
job or
ruin
something. That's
someone's
really
life and
dumb.
why slander them? I guess if it's written, it's actually libel. And why do that on the internet of all places? It's just mean,
Yeah, it really is, and it makes it harder for the cops anyway. And we don't want to make it harder for them to do their job. We just want to keep her story in the limelight and in front and center, so that eventually, at some point, like I said, it may not be because of us, but hopefully, we help in keeping the story alive and helping to bring, this killer to
I hope so.
justice.
How many questions total was there from our viewer or listener? Oh, so we answered them all.
There
Okay.
was six.
Okay.
Yeah, we did them all. So we apologize again about that. That was a it was a bad day
Technically.
for us with our connections. It was really bad, and it was so bad that I was like, we can't
Right.
even publish it. It was so bad. So anyway, when we have these issues, we apologize. It's just sometimes, how it is, and I'm sure everybody has these issues. Sometimes they have great signals, sometimes they don't. And we both actually have the same service, but we live in different areas, and for different reasons, I guess it just cuts in and out. So we hope that if we can keep it, good, then we will. If not,
yeah,
then we'll
and also,
trash it
you
and
know,
start
we've
over.
toyed with the idea of switching over to using our laptops and microphones. That might help. But for the time being, we're using our cell phones through the Anchor app. And so far, so good. I know we don't have the number one best, you know, audio quality out there, but I think, you know, with what we have to work with, it's probably going okay. But we may switch over to our laptops and microphones at some point.
Yeah, we're going to do that eventually. We just have to get it all. There's a few issues with the website. That's why we haven't done it. There's not a place to invite someone. So we haven't researched that and figured out why, but it seems to be that way across the board. Sometimes you have an app on your phone and it'll have several features that won't be on the website.
And since we're co-hosts, we live about, I don't know, what, 40, 50 miles apart. So we don't co-host in a studio in the same room. Now, that would be awesome if we had the budget for that and the time for that. But this is a way for us as busy moms to be able to get on, you know, the app really fast and do our podcast from the comfort of our own homes on the iPhone. So we do apologize if that sounds a little rickety sometimes, but we're keeping an eye on it and seeing what we can do to help it. Did we have anything else we were going to cover on this episode?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's everything we discussed.
To my memory, I think we did. So we love that she sent in these questions, and we're asking other people to do the same. I know we discussed something today also that Tim had talked to us about, and another one of our listeners. So anytime you have anything that you think about that you want us to cover, please let us know, because this is one of those cases that is just, oh my gosh, there's so many parts to this case and so many different things to look at and discuss. And sometimes we get to the point to where we're like, oh my gosh, what do we talk about? Even though we know there's a lot. So please let us know, send us an email, send us a message on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, doesn't matter. And let us know your ideas and your thoughts that you're thinking. And we'll definitely read them on the air and are on our podcast.
And if anyone has any comments on what we discussed tonight, if anyone has any more information on how DNA works, we're going to do some research. But I really am curious to know, is there some way that a very minuscule amount of DNA that's considered, you know, not enough to get a read on the person? Would it be enough to tell the gender? You know, that type of stuff. If there's anyone out there who has information like that that they could quickly share, we would really appreciate that as well. We're on Facebook. Now we're on Twitter, too. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as True Crime Broads. And we have an email address, which is truecrimebroads@yahoo.com.
Absolutely. If you have any information about this case, please call 972-937-PAYS. I guess that's going to be all for today, and we will probably do another one here in the next few days, maybe a week or so. And, you know, like I said, send in your information,
awesome,
your questions,
thanks,
and we will discuss it. And we
thanks, everybody.
Thanks, and we'll talk to you.